Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that explores the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here together with my co-host, Greta Anderson.
Later in the hour, I'll share a conversation I had with activist Terry Lohman about how Iowa has yet again shown its progressive colors. At the end of April, Iowa became the first state in the nation to change a rather draconian law regarding people with HIV/AIDS. And last week, Iowans hosted a conference attended by 175, I believe, activists from around the nation and beyond to tell folks how we did it.
After that, we'll talk with some of the Cambridge Community Events Committee about the Skunk River Valley Days, a festival that started yesterday and will be going on all weekend.
But first, a development in the story that you reported on Wednesday, Ursula, concerning the controversial hog confinement application in Milford Township. You may recall that Evan Berger of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement described how a substantial revision to the application was filed just 1.5 hours before the hearing, which was insufficient time for neighbors to address its content.
Yes, I recall that Evan alleged that the timing of the posting was illegal, and the county supervisor's chair, Paul Toot, countered later that he and the lawyer they consulted did not think that it was.
Right. Well, that point of debate will ultimately be resolved because on Wednesday, Evan and his group filed an official complaint with the Iowa Public Information Board about the county's handling of the factory farm hearing. On the same day, another neighbor made a public records request with the county to gain access to any communications among county employees or officials concerning the application.
It sounds like the Chelmond hog confinement story is a story we have not seen the end of yet.
Yes, and our next story actually shares some themes with that story. It revolves around land ownership and land rights and where people live. The story is really quite simple. A trailer park on the west end of Ames is closing. This is not a new story. Long-term residents of Ames often talk about how, one by one, the trailer parks in this town have closed. This, of course, is a concern to advocates of those with lower incomes, as trailers are one of the most economical ways for people to live.
Where is the trailer park that's closing?
Well, the name of the trailer park is College Park, but more frequently it's called the Trailer Park on Lincoln Swing, and it is just about 2 blocks west of the West Hy-Vee, tucked just back from Lincoln Way. I got word that that removals of the trailers there were underway, so I went over to see what I could see. I talked to a couple of families with very nice trailers who seemed to be related to one another, and they were all planning to move to Flummerfelt Trailer Park on South Dayton. Now, that trailer park is actually expanding to accommodate some of the new families from there and from elsewhere. Those families are definitely the lucky ones. They're going to have to pay extra, but they get to remain in Ames. The manager of the park drove by in his truck as I was around talking with my microphone in my hand, and he was concerned I might be soliciting, but once I explained who I was, he gave me some good information. For instance, there were 45 trailers in the park, and about 150 to 200 people are going to be affected by this change, and that's where we'll pick up my conversation with him.
Okay, so let's listen to that.
About what percent of people have moved out already?
Right now we have 19 vacant lots, and that's considered the bare lots. We have 1, 2, 3 holding spots that are empty, but the trailers are ready to move out. So we're looking at maybe 40% being out, and there's 60% of us left. A few people are moving to the new, I call it a new mobile home park that's just across the Boone County line, heading towards Boone on Lincoln Way. It's called Maple Grove. A few of those, if you're looking at numbers, I'm going to say probably maybe 12 trailers. So if they have families, I don't know. The rest of the trailers are being liquidated to the north side on Story County, which is Crestview Mobile Home Park, for him to resell or to update his problem with his trailer court.
How about you? Where are you moving?
Well, that's a hard choice. I could almost give you a slight story, but I'll try and make it brief, that I've been homeless before. That may be where I may be heading right now due to financial concerns. It takes financial ability. You're looking at the deposits. You're looking at the rent. And then, see, I'm on Social Security, so I'm on a strict payment, you know, per month. And I get a little stipend for helping around the park. But that's just helping me reduce a little bit of my rent. It just gets a little personal, so I don't really want to get into detail. I'll just start solving. So if I'm being broadcast, I'd rather not get that deep.
Well, it's deep enough just to contemplate the fact that you've lived here. How long?
I've lived here about 4 or 5 years. Okay.
Did you know this was coming?
I knew it as of January, the first part of the year, and I kind of knew it was coming, but I was thinking, no, they're going to pull a fast one. But January 31st, we did get our 6 months notice. Everybody has to be out by July 31st, by midnight. That's set to be done because of the construction that's going to be involved.
There are a lot of old trees in this park.
Yeah, that is, now the person that owns Crestview Mobile Home Park has the duty of chopping down one by one. There is old trees, you know, they're shady. They're shady, but come winter is, where's the shade? They're all gone, and it's just nice to see them. So, yes.
Yep, and we're hearing the birds outside, too.
Oh, I tell you what, you know, I get up at 3 o'clock every morning because of some problems I have, and I just hear the birds chirping. I just sit outside, just, you know, it reminds me back to the day where I think I'm facing being the homeless deal. Listening to the birds just kind of calms me down and saying, you know, focuses me. The birds are telling me that you're going to have a good day. So.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you very much, too. Have a good day.
That was Dan Soper, manager of College Park Trailer Park on Lincoln Swing.
It's hard to hear about somebody talking about losing home and possibly becoming homeless. Here at KHOI, we really aim to be the voice of everybody in the community, so it's important to hear the voices of somebody like that.
Well, you heard him choke up when he said that he'd been in the park for 4 years. A few minutes later, he told me that really finding this position, first as an assistant manager, then the manager, was like the opportunity of a lifetime for him. And I've been back to the trailer park several times, and each time I've seen him out and about helping his neighbors. And it really is a beautiful wooded setting, so I can see how he feels attached.
Did you record anyone else that lives at the trailer park?
Yes, I did. Cheryl Parks, the others I spoke with, didn't want to be on tape, but they all pointed to Cheryl's trailer and said, oh, talk to her. She was the one who stood up for the group during the zoning hearing a year ago in order for the owner to have his plans for an apartment complex. There was a little zoning issue that had to be taken care of, and she went to the hearings and spoke for them. In the interview, she refers to Alex, and that is the owner. Alex Gallion is a lawyer who works in Des Moines but lives in Ames.
My name is Cheryl Parks, and I have lived here for 17 years now. I work at the Super Walmart here in town. I've been there since they opened. Once I find some place I like to land, I lost my mom and dad 2 years ago to cancer. They were divorced, so it was a little shocking. I come home the night after my mom's funeral. I fell and laid on the floor back there for all night. When I woke up, my leg was like a balloon. I had nerve damage. So that went on for a year, and then this whole zoning thing come up. and trying to fight that and figure it out. Then I finally got back to work, and then I got depressed. And so it's just been a vicious cycle. And now having to do all the moving and still try to get to work, yeah, it just seems like a never-ending cycle right now for me.
Tell me what the move means to you. What do you have to do?
I have to rip up my flower gardens. I have to take out all the stones and statues that I put down. You know, this was my home. I planned on, I guess, living my days out here. But I really knew deep down that it was going to be sold. The land was valuable, still is. So it hasn't been easy. It hasn't. To watch a place that I loved and lived be turned into apartment complexes. And in the mobile home park here, there are a lot of low-income or no-income families. So this won't be easy for them either.
You've been kind of an advocate for the whole group at city council meetings. Do you know any of their stories about where they're going?
Mary Kay Litzel, who lived in the park, let me know what actually was going on besides the zoning. And so she started the whole ball, and then I just kind of took over for anybody and everybody that needed a voice. Some of the families are going to move out to Flummerfelt so they can stay connected. Some of us will be going to Maple Grove. Some of us will be going to, I believe it's Crestview. So our whole little community will be split up. Kids will have to go to different schools. They'll be moved away from their friends that they could just walk down and see. So, yeah, we've just been trying to keep our head above water and, you know, went to the zoning at the city council to figure out what actually was going to take place, what the plans were, how long we had. Alex gave us 6 months, which legally he only has to give us 30 days, so we were lucky on that point. And he has helped us, you know, as far as our moving. And he's done better than I thought he would, you know. But still, it's a devastating loss, a loss of a little community here. I'm glad Alex is helping us because I could not afford this. And I still can't afford the move. First and last month's rent, deposits on key, getting our gas line hooked up. I am on disability right now because I had an accident. I'm only working Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 6 hours a day, and I've only been back to work since April. So I had 2 to 3 months to come up with all this money. You know, I was in 2 truck accidents, and this was just in the last year. One was my fault, one was the other person. So now I have a loan, $165. My truck insurance is due, $535. I figure I need about $1,400 to get me through this month, and I will probably have about $800. I took my plastic jug full of pennies to the bank. There was $55 in pennies. I don't even know how many pennies that is, but it's a lot. So that's my fallback. I have a coin collection if need be. It would kill me to part with it. But you can't live on a coin, you know. You gotta have. I got 3 cats. I had to make sure they had all their vets before I took them out there. They're not outside cats, but anything can happen. You know, there's another, I don't know, $80-some. It just never ends. And I have an income. Most of these people don't. You know, some are disabled. Some are working mothers trying to put their kids in school. They have no father in the picture, or he's a part-time father, or, you know, they're adopted or a foster child. So it's not just me. I guess I've said it is, in a way, a start over. I get to start all over. I get to make a new home. I've got a bigger yard. I can put my flowers back in. You know, that's my release, my plants and my books. I read a lot. I don't have cable TV. I mean, I live as basic as you can. I have an antenna out there. I have a pay-as-you-go phone card because I can't afford a cell phone. You know, I have a pay-as-you-go credit card. Some of my work check goes on it. I am doing every possible thing I can do in the right way and trying to put it all together, you know, to just make it through this. You know, that's just one part of my life. That's not counting all the other lives that are affected by this move.
If there was one message that you could give to the planners of Ames, what would that be?
It would be more low housing. The students, yeah, they bring in a lot of income, but they don't live here their whole life. You know, we live here our whole life, and there's not enough low-income housing. This was pretty low-income. We had our water, our sewage, our garbage paid for. Now we have to pay for those things. I don't even know where to start and where to stop. No. And, yeah, I can't. I don't know. It's devastating. It really is.
Cheryl, thank you so much for talking with us and sharing this message.
You're welcome. I'm glad somebody's getting it out there. I don't think people realize what's going on in the low income and the struggles we have. It's not easy to live on disability. It's not easy to have to go to the county and ask for help. I have never had to do it before, and now I'm just like everybody else in America. So I'm glad you're getting our story told.
Thanks.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we are listening right now to interviews of residents of College Park Trailer Park home area, which is west of Hy-Vee?
Just west.
Just west. This is the east part of town or the west part of town?
West Hy-Vee.
West Hy-Vee.
Yep.
And trailer park is closing due to redevelopment, and this is a story that we're covering because it's really a story about low-income housing in Ames, which is an ongoing issue. And so we really felt that we needed to hear the voices of the people that are losing their homes in that area.
Well, part of that story of low-income housing is that more and more people who can't afford to pay the going rate in Ames are having to move out. And that is the case here. You heard about people moving outside of Ames proper to Crestview, which is still in Story County, and then moving out to Boone County to Maple Grove. And, of course, when they go there, they won't have bus service like they do at the Lincoln Swing Trailer Park. So if they depend upon the bus to get their groceries or to get to their job, they're going to have to figure out another way. They're going to have fewer services as well, not being Ames residents but being county residents. And the city can help with the first and last month's rent that both of my interviewees spoke of, but that is a program that is run through the federal government, the CDBG, and their requirements are extremely restrictive. So many people do not qualify because of past credit history or something like that.
Do you know what this property is being developed into?
Well, like Cheryl said, or as she suspected, it is pretty much for students. I spoke with the developer, and 250 bedrooms are planned. That's kind of how they speak of these developments, is how many beds they're putting in, and that is reference to how many bedrooms they have. Nobody doubles up anymore, I guess, in college like we did. you know, furthermore, this is a quite upscale development. There are granite countertops and stainless steel appliances being put in this apartment complex. The developer estimates it'll be $425 to $500 per bedroom, and these are in 2 to 5 bedroom apartments.
So Ames is getting less affordable for people with low incomes.
Yeah, it's very easy to see that trend. And on the other hand, you know, I spoke with Alex Gallion. He showed some positive aspects of this. The trailer parks that these homes will be going into are going to help those parks upgrade. So in Maple Grove, which is in Boone, they just got a new septic. One of the neighbors had told me that, Maple Grove, they have real septic issues and, you know, wrinkled her nose. And that has been taken care of because they know that they will have this extra income. And then Crestview, everybody's hoping that Crestview, with its new influx of trailers and funds, will be able to upgrade because there's some serious problems there. I spoke with a man. Tell me about the water.
The water is like brown and tasty so bad, and the smell really bad. Honestly, everybody knows.
Do you know if people have talked to the owner about it?
Yes, but he don't listen. I think he don't care.
And we're looking around, and I see that trailer is sitting up on wheels.
In the other side too, you see, by 9 trailers in the side of the road, plus those. What I can do?
And you think these are mostly trailers from Lincoln Swing Park?
Yes. Yes, yes, absolutely.
And what are the people who these trailers belong to? Where are they?
I don't know, honestly. I don't know.
So those trailers probably belong to the College Park owner, Alex Gallion, not the people who lived in them. But that was a young man, Jose, who lives in Crestview. And as he reported, the water there is brown, smells and tastes funny. So there's hope that maybe with the new trailers moving in, and there were 13 of them, we counted, sitting there up on blocks. It was kind of a chaotic situation out there, that maybe this Crestview Park owner can clean up that park a little bit. Anyway, Alex Gallion is a consumer bankruptcy attorney in Des Moines, and he expressed sympathy with the residents who are having to move out. He has offered to pay the cost of their move, which is about $1,000 per trailer. And he displayed a knowledge or a perspective about low-income housing by saying, look, we kept these 45 trailers in the housing stock. They were not just bulldozed and crushed, which would have taken them out of the low-income housing stock. They are still in the low-income housing stock, just not Ames City proper. And then he kind of talked in general about how many apartments are coming online in this year and next. Now, these are all pretty high rent apartments, so it's not like these are the ones that low-income people will move into. But he estimates 3,000 to 4,000 bedrooms, between 700 bedrooms that are going in Buchanan Hall. There's an apartment high-rise on South 16th going up across from the Grove Apartments. Breckenridge, if they get there, finally get through, they'll have some at the old middle school. There's the First National Bank on Lincoln Way, very high rent, again, apartments. But he points out that once those are in, the people who are now staying in the South Dakota apartments, for instance, will choose a nicer place, and maybe some of the pressure will be taken off of prices. He said that apartment prices everyone across the board had increased them by 10% this year just because of the pressure on housing. So that pressure is due to release a little bit in the next couple of years, and maybe that will provide some outlet for low-income people.
Okay, well, thank you, Greta, for this report. We've been talking about the closing of the College Park Trailer Park, which is west of the Hy-Vee in Ames, and talking in general about the situation of low-income housing in Ames. Thanks for making that report and going out and talking to those people.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with my co-host, Greta Anderson.
Our next story is about some activists who made a progressive change in Iowa, a change that was so progressive that we were the first in the nation to do it.
First in the nation, that sounds familiar for Iowa.
Yes. Well, it turns out that more than 30 states have laws on the books that exact very harsh 25-year sentences or more to people who are infected with HIV/AIDS who don't tell their sexual partners their status.
It seems that, your status would be a very good thing to tell your sexual partner.
Of course, no one is saying that it's not. But 25 years is practically a lifetime, and a lot of things have changed since that law was put into place two or three decades ago.
That's true.
For the last few years, some very skillful activists set about to change that law, and they did, with unanimous votes in the Senate and the House, and Branstad signed it into law. Last week, the same activists who got that job done in Des Moines held a national conference in Grinnell for people from across the nation on how to, as they call it, decriminalize HIV. Terry Lohman and his husband Mark have been organizers in the movement in Iowa and attended that conference, which was put on by the Community HIV and Hepatitis Advocates of Iowa Network, or CHAIN. Here's Terry Lohman.
CHAIN was started by a Unitarian Universalist in Des Moines 10 years ago. Scott Clare started it. And they did so because the drug program for people with AIDS had been cut, and they needed to get that restored. And they got it done in two or three years. And Scott said, "What should we do next?" And there was total silence. And finally he said, "How about removing the HIV disclosure law that causes so much trouble? People who are not contagious, who don't disclose, even though they do not infect anybody and do not intend to infect anybody, end up with 25 years in prison. There's a man in Idaho who got 30 years in prison, and he didn't infect anyone." Well, then Scott Clare in Des Moines said we should try to remove this disclosure law, get rid of it. And it went along for a couple of years, not a lot happened. And then Nick Rhodes got arrested. Again, he was not contagious, and he used a condom, but he did not disclose. So he got 25 years and a lifetime sex offender status. And he was the poster boy we needed. You've got to have somebody who looks like powerful people's relative, and he's just a nice-looking young white guy. And so we had the person, and he got 25 years, and so CHAIN, along Mark really started it, my husband, started a letter-writing campaign to the judge. And the judge let him out after a year in maximum security and a lot of solitary confinement, you know. And he was never violent or never meant to hurt anybody. He's just a real gentle man. So then we started organizing, and this is where we brought in Zero Project from New York, which is a nationwide HIV stigma advocacy or anti-stigma advocacy group.
Can you say the name again, Zero?
Yeah, Zero, like the blood, Zero Project, S-E-R-O. And they helped us organize panel discussions. And the first one happened right in your backyard at the Ames Public Library. We had Sean Strube, who's the organizer of Zero Project. We had Nick Rhodes, the young man who was arrested. We had Randy Mayer from the health department, the Iowa Public Health Department. And we had Tammy Hout, who is an AIDS widow. And she's HIV positive. She has a son that was born shortly after her husband passed away, who's HIV negative. And her husband died basically of stigma. He died in 1998, and at that point, there were really good drugs on the market, and he didn't need to die. But he was so humiliated and beaten down, he just kind of curled up and died and didn't bother with any health care. So she had a burning fire in her belly to do something about it. And we invited Beth Wessel Korshel and Lisa Heddens, and we invited Herman Kornbach, but he was out of town. So Lisa and Beth came to the panel discussion, and they couldn't believe that somebody could go to prison for 25 years without the intention of doing harm. Steve Sodders is the sheriff from Marshall County, and he was really the one that kind of drove the, if you don't have intention, you have no reason to put somebody away for 25 years. That's just ridiculous. It's over the top. Manslaughter is like 10 years or something like that, and that's where you've actually killed somebody. So at any rate, Beth was on the Health and Human Service Committee at the legislature, and she was very much our driver in the House. In the Senate, Matt McCoy is a gay man from Des Moines, and he and his legislative assistant, Christian, really worked hard to get this repealed. Rob Haug from Cedar Rapids wrote the new bill. We got rid of the old bill because Kornbach would not have any part of it. So we got rid of that and brought in a whole new bill so that he could sign on. And Scott Clare read over the bill and he said, why don't we remove these people from the sex offender registry retroactively? And he was an angel to do this because the way that destroys people's lives is incredible. And our sex offender list is just a really bizarre thing anyway. I was talking to a man at our church in Mason City, and he said a friend of his had to go to the bathroom, and he got stopped and put on the sex offender list because he was taking a leak on a road at 2 a.m. or whatever.
So that is part of the new law, is removing retroactively these folks.
The health law. And Tammy Hout, she took the panel discussions across the state. Anybody wanted panel discussion, she did it, because she knew if you could get just a few people to call up their legislator and say, you know, this is really a crummy law, get this thing out of there, that they would listen. But you've got to have it by more than 2 or 3 legislators. Doing it from Ames, Iowa City, and Des Moines isn't quite enough. So Tammy was our lobbyist, our key lobbyist, and she lived at the house for 2 years at the Capitol, I guess I should say. And she got to know every legislator, every senator, and it became almost a personal thing for them. They didn't want to disappoint Tammy. Tammy was a driver, but we had a lot of help. League of Women Voters, ACLU, One Iowa, Interfaith Alliance were our main ones, but there were like 20 groups that helped, or 30 groups. It was a phenomenal effort because it was such injustice.
That's a fabulous story. So the organizers of this conference, HIV is Not a Crime, were planning long before they knew that Iowa would repeal the law.
They started planning when the Senate voted unanimously to repeal it. Okay. Repeal and replace is really what they did. Okay. And it was an international conference. We had a man from the United Kingdom. Puerto Rico doesn't count as another country, but kind of, in Canada. There were 175 people who attended. They figured if they could get 50 people, they would be really happy. So that was a major accomplishment.
Is Iowa one of the first states to repeal and replace their...
We were the first state, and our law is a model law for the rest of the country.
Wow. Can you explain what the new law states?
First of all, you have to have intent, and you also need to be ignoring everything that you could health care and condoms and disclosure, just ignore it all. If you're not doing anything to take care of yourself, and I think you have to have an infection happen too. So it, which if you're under health care, is just a really unlikely thing. The health care is really good at it at this point.
So these laws were passed back when HIV was
a death sentence.
And mm-hmm. These drugs were not available. And
people were scared out of their minds. You know, one of the interesting things about this was the gay community was very opposed to removing this disclosure law in the beginning. And it needed to be explained to them that, first of all, when you're going to give somebody a 25-year sentence for not disclosing, the logical thing to do is to shut up and never tell anybody you're positive, because if you do, then they'll have a reason to turn you in. But if nobody knows it, and people who don't protect themselves are going to be in denial, they're never going to believe that somebody has HIV. And one of the features that the community, I think, finally embraced, the gay community, was that you need to be responsible for your own health and to depend on somebody else to tell you whether you're at risk is not very prudent.
Do you have any sense of how many people, for instance, in the state of Iowa are infected with HIV?
There are something like 2,500 people. And those are people who've been tested. It's estimated that 49% to 74% of all new infections come from people who do not know their status. Once you're getting treated, a short time after, you're not infectious. You have no viral load.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Terry.
I would like to add one thing, okay. And that's that after this process, we're rather dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, but after the process, we realize that we don't need to call them our enemies, the Republicans. Yes, there are some really off-the-wall people, and of course, the media is going to report on those people, but it was voted on unanimously in both the Senate and the House, and the governor signed it. So that we got to shut up and see where we can work together, particularly in Iowa, where we have fair reapportionment, and so that there's nothing contrived. In states where they can gerrymander, you end up with some really weird things. And we have a couple weird things, but it's done fairly.
That was Terry Lohman, and this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Terry is a member of the Community HIV and Hepatitis Advocates of Iowa Network. You know, Ursula, I work with Terry a lot at the Unitarian Universalist Church on our social justice ministry, and I'm always learning things from him. This fair apportionment fair reapportionment that he mentioned at the end of the interview, I was not aware of. You hear about gerrymandering in other states where when the districts need to be redrawn because of population changes, there's just an intense political battle, and who's ever in power in the legislature just makes the districts completely in their favor, and this favors extreme politics and so on. But in Iowa, what I read about this issue last night, Iowa's use of a nonpartisan state agency rather than the partisan legislature to redraw district lines is unique in the nation.
That's another way that Iowa has really proven to be forward-thinking, something we can be proud of.
Yes, definitely.
Did Terry say what the group would work on now that this law has been passed?
I did ask him that. He wasn't quite sure about what the chain group will work on, but he himself is working to unite members of our Unitarian Universalist faith across the state on social justice issues, and he said he might be looking at a death with dignity law, though he is not sure that wording is appropriate.
Interesting. Well, thank you, Greta. Thanks for covering that story.
Thanks, as always, Ursula, for the opportunity to be on the air.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts today, here together with Greta Anderson. And in the last few minutes of our show, we are going to speak with Marcia Kissner. Good morning. Hello, Marcia.
Good morning.
And welcome to KHOI Community Radio. Marcia has come to join us from Cambridge. And Marcia is with the Cambridge Community Events Committee. And you are here to tell us about what's happening. It started yesterday and is going through all weekend. We're talking about the skunk. Why don't you tell us?
Okay, thank you. I drove in all the way from Cambridge. We are south of Ames, 7 miles. Some of you may not know that. We're a little town and about 900 people, and we have an exciting celebration this weekend, the Skunk River Valley Days, formerly known as Jubilee Days. We changed the name this year. Our past committee retired, and so most of the members on the Cambridge Events Committee are all new, and so we got together and wanted to refresh the celebration, so we changed the name.
I hear you also, your byline for the event is, it's stinking awesome.
Yes. When we were talking about what name we would use, we read the history about Cambridge. And originally, the town was formed because they built a bridge over the Skunk River.
So tell us a little bit exactly, how do you get to Cambridge from Ames?
From Ames, you take New 30 east, and there is a sign that says Cambridge south, 7 miles.
Okay.
Or if you want to go on the interstate, we're exit 210.
Okay, great. And I just interrupted you. You were saying that Cambridge was built because there was a river across the Skunk, bridge across the Skunk River.
And they wanted to get goods and to Des Moines, and so they built a bridge, and then Cambridge was founded, and then they built the railroad also that went through. So,
so describe Cambridge a little bit.
Well, 900 people. It is in the Ballard School District, with includes Cambridge, Huxley, Kelly, and Slater. And so we have the elementary school there. So we have a lot of young families that have moved into the area. The majority of people work either in Ames or Des Moines or Ankeny. It is a small town, as I said. We have three churches, lots of family. Last night we opened with a family night of a movie in the park. And when I looked at the park, it was just, there were at least 75 kids just running up and down and over the grass. And it was a wonderful way to start the event.
What movie did you show?
We showed Up.
Up. The, okay.
Yeah. Okay. A wonderful. So
it sounds like it was well attended.
Yes. We were really excited.
Are you a longtime resident of Cambridge?
Yes. I am the pastor of the Lutheran Church, and I have been there 16 years, which, they tease me a lot about that I'm the old timer.
Okay. Well, describe the Skunk River Valley Days. What is happening?
We began last night, as I said, and then we have events tonight. I think one of the things that describes the celebration is we're really family oriented. We really wanted to make it kid friendly. So the main events are on Saturday, but we have tonight is the fireworks, and that's always a highlight. And then we also have Sweet Adelines and the High Society Band, which is our community band, and lots of food. Every celebration I've ever gone to anywhere, you always have a lot of food. And tonight with the Methodist Church does the homemade pie and ice cream. And that's always really popular. And then tomorrow on Saturday is our highlight day. We begin with a parade. With floats. We've doubled our route this year to encourage more people to sit along the parade route. That was the story I heard. We put up the signs to tell people what the parade route was, and I kept hearing people say, "Oh, I can just walk out my door and sit at the curb and watch the parade go by," which is what's one of the things we wanted. Then in the afternoon, all of the events, most of the events are in the park. We have a rock wall this year for the kids. We know they're going to be excited about that. We have a slide and a bouncy house. We have a pie eating contest. One of the highlights also for family friendly band is Mr. S. and the Sandbox Band. He's from our area, and so we're excited about that.
What kind of music?
He wrote kid friendly songs. He does have a website, but most of the people are really excited about him coming in. We have the backyard barbecue. We've been encouraging people to bring in their barbecue and have a contest, and so that's very exciting. That's something new for us too.
What is the Yucky Duck Derby?
Oh, that
I'm looking at your flyer here.
Yeah, we originally wanted to have ducks go down the Skunk River, but we were encouraged not to do that because we would lose most of the ducks and we couldn't, and the manpower it would take. So what we decided to do is we'll have a pool, a large pool filled with water, and we have these yellow ducks that are painted, and they're yucky looking, and you can purchase them and then win a cash prize.
So these are not live ducks.
No.
These are rubber ducks?
Well, that might have been a good idea. Maybe that's next year. Yes, they're rubber ducks that are painted funny.
Okay, and then you also have a beer tent, is that correct?
Yes, and that's on Saturday night. Danny Grouse will be playing for that and dancing, and so the adult entertainment.
Mm-hmm. And there's a craft and vendor show?
Yes, that's we have had those in the past years, but we've been encouraging our local people to come in and have some crafts and some items that they're willing to sell.
And then I see also on Sunday morning there's going to be a worship in the park with a potluck afterwards.
Yes, and that's the I've been here 16 years and we've been doing that with the local churches for the past. We tried to figure out the date, and we're figuring that it's at least 25 years old that we've been doing that in the park, a community event, and I really enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Will you be leading the worship service as the pastor?
No, this year the Methodist pastor will be preaching, and I'll be doing the rest of the service.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably be doing a children's sermon. I bought some squirt guns, so I'm trying to think how to fit the squirt guns in with a children's sermon. I'm sure I can do it.
If you can fill it with water from the Skunk River.
Oh, thank you.
And have a yucky squirt gun.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yucky baptism.
Yeah, we won't call it holy water.
So we're speaking with Marcia Kistner, who is from Cambridge. And Marcia is with the Cambridge Community Events Committee. And we're talking about the festivities going on in Cambridge called the Skunk River Valley Days, whose slogan is, "It's stinkin' awesome."
One of the reasons we came up with that is when we came up with the name Skunk River Valley Days, we were talking that some people, we won't name names, might think that, you know, by calling it skunk, that, you know, it would stink. So we played on that and said, yes, we take that. We're stinkin' awesome.
So you're embracing it.
Yes, we are. And one of the things is working, we have a committee of about 11 that have worked very hard, and we have a wonderful sense of humor. And I think that carries through from Cambridge. It's, you know, we're a small town and we enjoy time together and we enjoy, laughing about a number of things. And one of them is that we're stinking awesome.
So you don't entirely take yourself seriously?
No, no.
You have a pretty town too. I think Cambridge is one of the prettier towns in the area.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is in a valley. And it, I think it's just, you know, we're by the Ballard Creek and by the river, and which includes a lot of trees and plants. So it is a beautiful. And
the
local park is really pretty.
So is this a festival that folks from outside of Cambridge are invited to?
Oh, we certainly hope so. We consider ourselves family friendly, and we enjoy meeting people, and we hope that they will join us for this festival.
So, give us a description of why somebody should make the trip to Cambridge for the festival.
Well, one of the things, you could meet me, and I'm very friendly and very nice. Now,
you're going to be out there?
You bet. You can. We will have tags, lanyards, yellow lanyards with our volunteer and our names on them if you have questions. And we'll be wearing blue shirts that say Skunk River Valley Days. It's stinking awesome if you have questions. I think the weather is supposed to be beautiful. It's a wonderful time to meet people and to get to know some new people, and bring your children. And I think you'll really enjoy it. Last night I was talking to some other committee members. We are so excited to participate in this ourselves. Not just, you know, to have other people enjoy it, but just we're looking forward to having fun with each other also.
Okay, well, thank you, Marcia Kistner. We've been talking about the Skunk River Valley Days, and everybody's invited, whether you're from Cambridge or not.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Earlier, we spoke with Dan Soper and Cheryl Parks, two residents of the College Park Trailer Park in West Ames, which is being removed for construction of upscale student housing. We also spoke with Terry Lohman to get the backstory for the passage of the HIV/AIDS bill in Iowa this past month. Links to the schedule will be available on our website. Do you have that online?
Yes.
Okay. And you can also download and listen to the show and past shows.
We've been your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and Greta Anderson. Rick Morrison engineered the show. And as always, our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join our team and learn how to do radio, call us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or drop by the studio at 410 Douglas Avenue.
As always, it's you, the listener, that makes KHOI possible and makes Local Talk possible, as well as your generous contributions. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.